Good evening, everyone. Good evening. You've tuned in to Paradigm Shifters, people making a difference in the collective of our species on our planet at this time. And tonight, we're having a wonderful guest who's been with us before, but it's been a long time. Kathleen Ingram has been working with horses, starting off with probably before, but also through Epona, but now with your own system. Kathleen Ingram, why working with horses? What can they do for us, to us, with us?
Good evening. Horses are amazing. And I've been a practicing psychotherapist for almost 30 years.
And very innovative one, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. First got introduced because Barbara Rector brought the horses to Sierra Tucson, which is a treatment center. And
Drugs and alcohol.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And the horses were able to work with the adolescents. I always say that the horses worked with the adolescents because they didn't speak that much either. Mm. And then I met Linda Kohanev through Barbara Rector, and I think you already know that because you and I have talked about that before. And I worked with Linda till 2007.
And you worked with the Epona
system. With the Epona, yeah, Epona Equestrian Services.
Which really kind of tossed the horse concept of equine therapy up into the air for more people to grab it.
It really did. Linda's books, The Tao of Equus and Riding Between the Worlds, particularly. Actually, Linda wrote Riding Between the Worlds after we started our first apprenticeship program.
Hmm.
So I've trained through Linda, and I worked with a woman named Lee Shambo, and I work with three different programs right now around the world. So I've trained probably about 140 people in equine facilitated learning now.
Wow.
I bring in what I call the psychological, scientific, spiritual underpinnings.
Oh, great. Oh, that's
all three combined. I don't know what else to call it, but that's really what my...
Well, let me just throw this at you. We're all talking about the Mayan calendar and those incredible downloads of consciousness that are supposed to be taking hold. Do you feel that this new rapport with horses and their incredible wisdom and the healing potential and what you call the psychosocial spiritual or whatever.
Yeah, the three things.
Is that part of the, I kind of think it's part of the wave of consciousness that's moving through our whole species or our whole reality, isn't it?
I believe it is. I actually quote something from talking about the threshold of 2012. And, you know, without getting too far out with it, what I believe is that what's happening is that we are paying more attention to all the animals and, you know, the indigenous cultures and everything and really looking at the wisdom behind that. Mm-hmm. The horses are so accessible. I mean, people love dolphins, and I do too, but not everybody gets to swim with a dolphin. But most people can find a horse. And one thing I know about the horses is because I do get to travel a lot, pretty much every horse that I've worked with seems to be available. I mean, Linda talks about the horse ancestors. And again, it's a collective wisdom of the horses.
Hmm. But they always say the whales hold the collective wisdom of our species. And I do question that horses probably do too, don't they?
Yeah, and I whale's one of my medicine. So, yes, I think so. Again, what I always say to people is that the horses are accessible, and they seem to be very willing. One of the things that happens with the work with the horses is not only do they help us to heal people, I've seen a lot of horses heal from maybe traumatic past themselves.
Hmm.
It's almost like when you look at a horse and the horse understands that you're actually respecting their boundaries and their space, because we do a lot around that when we work with horses. They look at you like, really?
Are you for real, me?
Yeah. And, you know, I don't consider myself an animal communicator. I believe that the horses speak in the language that I don't necessarily understand, but what I do know is that the horses really open up and help people to feel. And, you know, my website's The Sacred Place of Possibility.
Mm-hmm.
And you and I have talked about that before, as I talk about holding the sacred space.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really the horses that helped me to solidify that concept.
Hmm.
I think as a therapist, I've been trying to do that for a long time. But the horses really do it without any judgment or any expectation.
So tell me, let's use an example of some sort, okay, about how you like awakened to it, or you went in, you were working with horses in a recovery center, for example.
Oh, how I was awakened to it?
Either you or some of your clients,
yeah,
or how
well,
did people
actually,
get
I always,
it affected?
Yeah, I tell people that I believe when Barbara Rector, through a man named Reed Smith, brought the horses to Sierra Tucson, that was in the early 90s. I don't think we even had a name for this then. Hmm. Now you hear equine-facilitated learning, equine-facilitated psychotherapy, you know, lots of different names for it. But I actually was director of marketing then, so I wasn't working with them directly, but I was very interested in how, because I like to watch, and I was watching to see what was happening. And then Barbara asked me to do what she called therapy, taking therapy into the barn, I think that's what Barbara Rector called it. Hmm. And so how I got involved with it, as you know, I had a pretty big practice here in Tucson.
Oh, like yeah, you do.
Practice, yeah. Mm-hmm. But I worked with a lot of people with addictions, eating disorders, post-traumatic stress. And what I started to see when I was working, before I even met the horses, was that people needed more than I could give them, and they needed body work or they needed some other alternative therapies.
Mm-hmm. I mean, like touch?
Touch, some sort of touch.
Yeah.
And
energy.
So, and energy therapy. I mean, I have some training in cranial sacral work myself, but there was something that was missing. Mm-hmm. And so when I saw the horses, what I started to see is they were helping people immediately in the moment.
Hmm.
And I think I sent you a handout, but anyway, there is one on my website.
I did.
Too.
I it's very interesting, so please talk about it.
Yeah, called it. Well, it's what we know is that 90% of our knowledge comes from something called implicit knowing, and that is felt in the body.
Okay.
The explicit knowledge that we have, we read books, you know, we study, we go to school and everything, that's about 10% of the learning and how it is integrated.
Mm-hmm.
So, in other words, if I'm working with someone in a therapy office and we're talking, there was always that place that was just like there was a piece missing.
Hmm.
And so when I saw what was happening with the horses, I started to realize that. So there was a lot of this work that I'm doing now is actually people that are doing a lot of research, mental health people like Daniel Siegel, for instance, three doctors who wrote a book called The General Theory of Love, which is excellent.
Hmm.
I think that's where I got the explicit, implicit piece from. A guy named Norman Dodgy, that wrote a book called The Brain That Changes Itself.
Now, oh, I heard a bit about that one. I haven't heard of the other two, so I guess I better get working
yeah.
on that.
Well, if you'd be happy, I'll send you my book list that I use, because
I love that.
Teach, like I said, internationally, and then I also mentor some people individually, so I'll send you that. But anyway, what I saw happening with the horses, now I can actually name, because these scientists are doing the research.
Hmm.
And, for instance, Daniel Siegel will say that the original wound happened in relationships, so whether it was in the child or whether it was a family relationship or even a divorce. It happened in relationship. So what he claims is that the only healing that can take place has to happen within relationship.
Hmm.
Now, what happens with the horses...
Well, that really makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And what happens with the horses, and a good therapist, so as a facilitator, you know, and I teach people to facilitate, mm-hmm. This is important for them, is to be able to hold the space, and that's why I call it the possibility, for something new to change.
Hmm.
Now, what happens implicitly is that, I'm trying to do this kind of slowly, but is that the same stimulus might feel the same in the body. So let's say somebody is walking towards a horse and feels this rise of fear.
Mm-hmm.
And we work with emotions, and Linda created something called the emotional message chart that's great that a lot of people use. And we really will help someone differentiate between the fear of, is the lion coming, the fear is this horse going to run over me, or something called vulnerability.
Hmm.
And vulnerability happens when something really great is going to happen, and it also happens when something is going to change.
Hmm.
So one of the things that the horses help people do, what we do as facilitators, is help people to identify the difference in their body because the emotional feel the same. So there's a psychological term called a corrective emotional experience. And what that means is that the stimulus felt the same, but the experience had a different outcome. So somebody might have something come up. They, you know, a lot of times we store these memories in our bodies, and we're not, we don't even have words for them, which is another reason why the horses work so well.
Because they don't need the words.
They don't need the words. And, you know, it's not really, I always tell people, it's not really magic. I mean, it feels like magic sometimes and looks like it, but it's actually really practical. I was interviewed by somebody when I was over in England, and the guy said, no, I don't think what you do is alternative. I think it's practical. And I went, thank you.
Well, is it a kind of a resonance magnetism? Is that what it is?
It is a resonance. There is something that's called emotional resonance. Mm-hmm. And there is a resonance that happens when you're, like, you know, you and I are in resonance right now.
Yes.
And there's a resonance that happens when people are in the presence of a horse. Again, we are able to start, we are able to explain it a little bit more. Their blood pressure usually lowers.
You mean the people or the horse?
The people, well, both.
Okay.
I mean, they can actually measure this now. Have you heard of the Institute of Heart Math?
Yeah, I was just going to talk about a little bit about what I've heard that they've discovered.
Yes, and they've actually done some work with horses.
Yeah, I heard that they did a lot about the coherence of...
Yes, it's all about the coherence, and the horses, of course, have a very, very big energetic field.
Mm-hmm.
And their heart field is huge. And, you know, now that the Institute of Heart Math, you know, has been measuring how big the heart field is, so much bigger than the brain. So,
and they're actually measuring it scientifically with instruments.
They're measuring it with instruments, yes. And there are some people that are involved with equine therapy that are doing that. I'm really grateful for anyone that's doing research. I've been a clinician so long that I'm not the best researcher. I'm out there doing it, you know.
Yeah. Well, it's different for everybody.
That's right.
Got to be coherent with yourself.
Yeah. But the one thing that they really know now is that we really, they call it the three brain theory, and that we have a brain in our heart, we have a brain in our gut, and we have a brain in our head.
Uh-huh.
And when someone says, I have a gut feeling, that's what we help people work with. Because what does that mean?
Yeah, really.
It means their body is speaking to them.
I want to go back to something else you said, which is implicit knowing. I go, isn't that all part of the same thing, where you read something and you go, I just know this is right.
Exactly.
I just know it.
But it's implicit.
And the other thing that you had was this feeling that you weren't able to do all of it. But I wonder if that isn't kind of a wonderful energy that's a drive to explore the next, you know, to reach. You know what I mean?
I'm not too sure of the question. You mean...
I don't know if it's a question. I think it's more of an interesting comment from my own perspective.
Yeah.
That when we have those, oh, there's something missing here, that's often the push that it takes us to reach farther.
Yes. And I think it is. I mean, for me to let go of a practice that was pretty successful and to sort of do something that was really out of the box at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when Linda's first book came out, we were both extremely surprised that we got so much response.
Really? Yeah.
It was just like, what? I mean, it was just amazing.
And you were working with her at that time?
I worked with Linda from the beginning. She had another person that was working with her for a while, but she founded Opponent Equestrian Services with a group of riding instructors. But then she and I started working together and created something we call the Opponent Approach, which was, you know, both of us bringing our experience and our expertise. And I think you read some. Well, you came to a workshop.
I did indeed.
I think you came to one of our first workshops.
I did, and you guided me. I enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, so
I don't remember I don't remember my eurekas and epiphanies. I know they were there, but it was a while ago.
Well, one thing I wanted to say, because you did ask, you know, why horses.
Mm-hmm.
The reason that horses are so brilliant at this is they're prey animals.
Ah.
Okay. So people always say, well, my dog is this and that and my cat. And I say, yes, and I, you know, they're wonderful. But the prey animal is like ready to run at an instant. Their bodies are very in tune to anything that is out of sync.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, if I'm feeling something inside and I'm saying something else on the outside,
They get warned, yeah. They're warned.
Right. And so they really help people with that too. So, you know, we always talk about walking your talk or, you know, but it's impossible. When I teach other people to be facilitators, I say, you know, you really need to do your work. And my clients, students usually say, Kathleen, you're hard. I'm going, because the horses cannot differentiate. You're
really
not sitting behind a desk.
Yeah, really.
You know,
it's not about your idea. It's about your heart, about your three brains, right?
Yeah. And so the horses really pay attention to that slight edge of nuance.
Oh, were you raised with horses?
No. No. On my website, there's a picture of my grandmother that was taken in 1908, I think, in Wisconsin. I'm from the Midwest.
Mm-hmm.
And Barbara Rector came to my house and saw this picture of my grandmother with a black and white horse. And she said, "Are you a horse person?" I said, "Well, I've always liked horses." My youngest daughter, Megan, always says, "Mom, why didn't you do this when I was young?" Because she's a horse person. But, you know, I really wasn't raised with them. And it was Barbara Rector seeing my grandmother's picture in my living room that inspired her to ask me to help and do this work.
Oh, that's wonderful. And also having these horses come to the recovery center, didn't that also have a push for you?
Yes, it did. Yes, because that's when I was first exposed. And that's why someday I'll get my book finished, but I'm always in the process. And it's called, the working title's Unexpected Grace.
Oh, nice.
Because that's really, when I think so much of life is, you know, it's unexpected grace. I did not plan on doing this.
Mm-hmm.
It was not something I had in mind.
Love it, though?
Oh, I love it. And, you know, I think that's, you mentioned something about the article in my last newsletter, Conscious Generativity.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm 66 now.
Mm.
So it's like, okay. I'm not retired.
And that for people, there's a system. I was reading about it last night on your explain it to people. There's phases of our life, right?
Yes.
Do you want to give people a thumbnail? Because I think it's really
Erickson talked about the different stages of life. The last stage of life, you know, and this was written years ago, okay, but it was like from 65 to whenever, would be this stage that he called the wisdom years.
Mm.
Well, that's great. You know, I think that's wonderful. I like to think that I might have some of that. But the years before that, he calls the years of generativity.
Mm.
So what I was writing about in that newsletter was that I think that a lot of us are in a state. You, and you know, I don't remember how old you are, but anyway, we're in a
state. I'm older than you, sweetie.
Okay, great. Good for you.
but I'm also really on it. I'm not like old and wise. I'm active, and I have new projects. I have great things to discover.
Well, and that's why I decided to call it conscious generativity.
Yeah, I like that very much.
Because it's what I made up, but you know, but it's like using. So we're in a stage now. Again, I mean, Erickson wrote, you know, he lived in the early 1900s. I can't remember exactly. I think I quoted whenever he lived and died, but. He was a protege of Freud, like many of the early people.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people know about Erickson's work. I mean, pretty much anyone that takes Psych 101 gets his stuff. So I thought, well, I was thinking about it because I thought, no, a lot of us aren't retired.
No, that 60 really to 80 bonus time that our generations are getting.
Exactly. And we're not really, I don't like the word semi-retired. Do you?
No.
Yeah. It's like, no, I'm not semi-retired. I mean, I'm a grandmother like you, and I love that, and I want to have more time to do some of those things. So that's why I thought about it. I thought I'm much more conscious of where I spend my time.
I think that's really brilliant.
Yeah. I'm traveling a lot. When you contacted me, I was in England. I was over there for 6 weeks.
I know. I was excited for you.
Yeah.
But I just want to say another thing. When people talk about retiring, I say I'll never retire because it's like being an artist. And an artist can't retire because there's always new things to paint, you know.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
So we're always blooming. Hmm?
That's right. We have our own canvas, huh?
Yeah, we're wisdom blooming.
And, you know, I get to work with these amazing, amazing creatures, you know, wonderful people.
Mm-hmm.
And these amazing creatures. And I mean, I work with some people, because I'm trained as a psychotherapist, I'm able to work with people that, you know, might be considered really difficult.
Yeah, really.
You know, and I also work and train with people that are doing coaching, mm-hmm. which is a different phase. I actually consider that more of what I do now is coaching, but I do have a mental health background, so I can work with people that have, you know, more serious things going on.
Mm-hmm.
I don't practice as a psychotherapist here in Tucson anymore.
Oh, you don't?
No, because I'll be going to Washington State in a few weeks.
I know you're coming up August 18th, aren't you,
yeah.
to be in Kitsap County?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then I'll be in New York at the end of August.
Mm-hmm.
Working with Lisa Merle, who has a program called Equine Alchemy. Isn't that a great name?
That's a great name. Is yeah. it similar stuff?
Yes. She actually has a coach training program where she incorporates the horses. She's a former student of mine. We're colleagues now.
Mm-hmm.
And she brings me in to do my piece.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And then in September, I'm going to Germany. One of my former students brought me over there last year, so I'm going back there to Dusseldorf.
Wow.
And I go to Canada. I work in Canada. So.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So you're really having, I mean, it sounds like it's kind of fun, too, is it?
It is. Except last year when I was in England in September, I fell down a flight of stairs at a restaurant.
Oh, no.
And broke my right ankle.
Oh, wow.
My left knee gave out and I broke my right ankle. So,
wow.
I'm not as quite mobile as I was, but I mean, I'm fine. I mean, obviously, I just got back from England, so I've been on and off the planes.
Hmm.
But people
could the horses help you heal that?
Yes, in a lot of ways they did. I worked with one of my friend's horses here in Tucson.
Mm-hmm.
And I did some work with the horses energetically. In other words, I wasn't really in their space. I was in the hospital for a little bit longer, and I don't want to go into all that, but it was a little bit longer than I had anticipated, let's just say that.
Mm. England, you were in
hospital? No, actually I flew back to the States, but because there was two injuries, my knee and my ankle, on both my walking legs, mm-hmm. I was in a wheelchair, and I was actually in a nursing home.
Oh, my.
So I was the youngest person in the nursing home, so
oh
that's
my.
A whole other conversation, but...
But
really,
you did some fancy teaching while you were there, girl.
Yeah, I did. I did a lot of phone work, actually.
Uh-huh.
But I also really got to actually spend time with myself just to really see, and maybe that's why I'm thinking of this conscious generativity, you know. I was watching the people there, and I could see ones, even that might have Alzheimer's, who were still connecting.
Hmm.
So the other thing I always say about the horses is they really help people with relationship.
Hmm. That's wonderful. Can we talk about horses just for a minute? Because I think a lot of us are aware that horses as a species have been used miserably by mankind
yes.
for a long, long time.
Yes.
And talk about ancestral memory.
Yes.
They and many of us have gone on to those little riding things where you've got all
uh-huh.
these plugs that are overused and they're
right.
kind of half awake.
Right.
How about them? Is the consciousness moving through horses? Is it just for the creme de la creme that they're getting kind of freer in the respect that they're being given and being listened to and so on? What do you think's happening with horses?
I believe that horses are they're in a much better place of respect. You can even thank some people like Monty Roberts and Pat Parelli.
Oh my goodness.
The movie The Horse Whisperer, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Those types of things bring the awareness to people in a different way.
Yeah.
What I see as I'm doing my traveling is that people are just really willing to eat it up. A lot of my students early on were kind of afraid to deal with what they would call, quote, traditional horse people.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm seeing is out here in the West, we have the cowboy, right?
Right.
And there's actually people that have lived with and worked with horses around them for a long time have what the cowboys call a feel.
Mm.
And one of the things that I'm seeing happening is that more people that have been with horses or, like you said, maybe riding a plug, or a lot of women, men too, but a lot of women that maybe had ridden, you know, when they were younger and maybe competed.
Right, okay.
They got to the point, though, where they didn't like the competition. There was too much restriction on the horse.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is that a lot
and
of
barrel
things,
riding and all that stuff, which
yeah,
is pretty
and
hard.
Yeah, you know, I'm not saying there's anything wrong about that, okay? Mm-hmm. Because there's a lot of love there too. There's a lot of relationship connection. But what happens is that people sometimes go away from it, particularly with real, real strong competition, okay?
Mm-hmm.
They go away from it. And then what they did, I mean, a lot of people, when they read Linda's books, the first book, Tao of Equus, brought many people back that said, you know, I've always loved horses. I loved them as a little girl. I mean, my granddaughter has horses everywhere.
Hmm.
And is it because of her grandma? I don't know, but she's got them everywhere. Every book she reads is about horses.
Aww.
Things like. She's eight, you know.
Yeah, she just has it in her, huh?
Yeah, it's there. She just loves them. And anyway, what people are starting to see is they're coming back to their original connection with the horse. I mean, think about how long humans have lived with horses,
mm-hmm.
forever and ever.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I believe is happening with the horse now is we're coming back to a more natural way of being with them.
Not whipping them and beating
them
up.
No, and most of the work that I do with people is working with the horses on the ground. Because I'm not a riding instructor, although I work with, you know, a lot of riding instructors, I don't feel comfortable putting someone on the back of a horse.
Mm-hmm.
I'm more comfortable with working with them on the ground. Because the horses are helping them to see more about their, feel more about their emotions, to be really clear about their messages, to be clear about their boundaries, to be clear about how much space they need.
Hmm.
There's just a lot of things that are happening. And
in that work, the horses themselves go through recovery as well?
Yeah, that's what I was saying to you earlier. Okay. What I have seen over and over again, and somebody was just telling me, this lady that I work with in New Zealand, she was telling me about a client of hers that had a horse that had a really severe injury. I can't remember what it was, but anyway, very severe, and so was extremely hypervigilant to any kind of noise or anything that might happen. And she said, Kathleen, it was amazing. She said, we were working with this horse, and she said, after the second or third session, the horse was calm. Her client was calm. The horse was calm. And there was a lot going on. There was something really, you know, big going on. The other horses were running around. And she says, do you think these horses really can heal too? And I said, yes.
Wow.
Just like they help us. I've seen this over and over again. Linda had a horse named Noche that she's written about. If anybody's read the Tao of Equus or Riding Between the Worlds, he's, mm-hmm. he left us. He's in the other world right now. But not really. He's still around. But I saw him heal from some pretty severe emotional trauma and become just a master.
Wow.
As a matter of fact, Linda wrote about him in she has a Way of the Horse cards with an artist named Kim McElroy, and we called him the Master of Sadness because he would just tell people. People would just stand there, Noche, and start to cry and let go of a lot of things.
Oh.
That's the other thing that can happen. You see, the horses don't really, they feel what's going on with your emotion, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so the reason that I believe that people will start to cry sometimes is they really feel held.
Mm-hmm.
And the horse doesn't question them. They don't ask them questions. They don't say, why are you feeling that way? Or you shouldn't feel that way. So a lot of times we'll see somebody
their defenses
with the
drop.
Horse and,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There's different exercises we do. And again, you know, you came to one of our first workshops, so you can imagine we keep creating more and more. But,
oh, yeah.
But
I keep thinking as you're talking about more and more people are becoming equine therapists or however they're referred to and
uh-huh.
having this rapport and teaching this rapport. But by the same token, more and more horses are becoming opened and available to meet this. The evolution is happening in both ways, isn't it?
Yes.
How
I mean,
exciting.
That's what's exciting. I mean, this lady I work with in New Zealand, I'm doing mentorship with her. And, you know, she can't come to here. She can't come here. I'm mm-hmm. not going to necessarily go to New Zealand. There's people all over the world now that are very interested in this work.
Where is it really, really big? Is it mostly in America or Canada? Or?
Well, there's a lot in England.
Mm-hmm.
Canada, there's quite a few. We also have... Let's see. Well, Australia, I've got a student that wants me to, a former student, wants me to come to Australia. So there's a lot going on in a lot of different places.
And is it a big deal in, say, what used to be Russia and down in South America?
There's some in South America. I don't have a lot of contacts myself in South America, but there are some. Mm-hmm. I think that's going to be coming.
And China. What about China? I mean, I'm just sort of interested in where this
is
blossoming.
Yeah, actually, a woman that I taught very, Linda and I, that came through Linda's in my program early on, was living in China at the time. She's actually Finnish, but she was living in China at the time she came, so I remember interviewing her on the telephone from China. she wasn't Chinese, obviously. She was Finnish, but I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know how much is going on, but like, for instance, so I have a woman that was a student of mine that I just saw in England, actually. She just graduated from the training program there, and she went to Mongolia.
Hmm.
So her story about going to Mongolia was interesting, and what she saw, you know, with the horses and the reindeer tribes. Are you familiar with the book The Horse Boy?
Oh, yeah, and I love the movie, both.
Okay,
yeah.
Right. Okay, well, another one of my... I guess I like to say the former students, because she just graduated. Her woman, her name is Dawn. She runs a horse boy programs in England.
Oh, she does?
Yeah.
For autistic kids?
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. Her name is Dawn Oakley-Smith, and she graduated from the IFIL training program with Sun Tui and some of us that live in, that are working in England.
Oh.
And she's wonderful. And so...
and they took that from the experience of all that, the horse boy and
because,
the autistic child?
Yeah, because Rupert, you know, took his son, as you know, if you know the story, you know, his autistic son, and then they made a movie of it. He wrote the book.
But his rapport with horses is what got the boy
But he's not trained in the therapeutic aspect.
Right.
So Dawn came through our training program, and... And so she's been working over there now with the autistic kids.
Hmm.
There's people here, of course, in the States that are doing that, too.
And what about with PTSD, with
yes.
veterans? There's
yes.
been some really big breakthroughs, I think, haven't there?
There have been. Now, since I'm a psychotherapist, I'm very careful about who works with the PTSD, because you have to have a lot of experience. You know, if you're working with someone that has post-traumatic stress from war, mm-hmm. they probably have what they call complex PTSD. Maybe they had something from childhood, too. But I finished a program over in England with my friend Sun Tui called the Dare to Live program, and she got okayed by the British Combat Stress Society to work with these veterans.
Hmm.
So one of the things I was doing when I was over there was we worked with four veterans in a pilot program. Very exciting. Amazing. We did 2 days with these guys. It was amazing to see the difference in them.
What could be the danger if it were if you don't have okay
if you
what,
don't have the training in how to deal, you know, and I think you need to have somebody that has a good mental health background, okay?
Yes.
Because if somebody gets triggered, you know, into an episode of post-traumatic stress, they can't differentiate between the here and now.
Mm-hmm.
That moment feels exactly like that moment when they had that first traumatic experience.
Mm.
There's no differentiation.
And we don't know what the triggers could be, do we? It's
right.
Myriad.
You don't know. I mean, you know, like you and I are Vietnam era people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know friends of mine that were, you know, in the Vietnam War, and they'd be triggered by the sound of a helicopter.
Mm-hmm.
These fellows that we worked with in England had been in Northern Ireland, Iraq, and Afghanistan.
Oh, my. That's enough.
So, and you know, these wars right now are so hard on these guys, and mm-hmm. men and women, because, mm-hmm. you know, they never know what's going to happen from one moment to the next.
Right. So it's all kind of guerrilla in a way.
Yeah. So I think that well put together programs like Sun Tui's done over in England, and I believe my friends, Wendy and Andre up in Toronto, Canada at Horse Spirit Connections are putting together a program, or at least they were asked to working with people that have PTSD, particularly vets.
Hmm.
Again, if you have somebody that has a good, works with the horses and also understands the limitations, I guess I would say.
Hmm.
What we did for the 2 days with these vets, though, was just amazing. They learned more about themselves. One of the guys, we asked him to give us a few words at the end, and his word was courage. And he said, I have been afraid every day of my life since, you know, he had experienced PTSD.
Hmm.
And he said, now I can tell the difference between that kind of fear and the kind of fear that you guys call vulnerability.
Hmm. Wow.
I mean, you know, how, there's nothing better than that.
Nothing at all, because that was a group of people that was kind of written off by many, right?
Yes. Yeah, and I don't want to go into too much of the story because it's, you know, it's private, but I got to tell you, to watch these four men go through this program with these horses, the other thing that happens is, this is why I think the horses, they know something that we can't even put in words. They will pick the right person to work with.
Yeah, that's true, isn't it?
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. You might even remember that from your experience.
I do remember it. Yeah. I can't remember who picked me, but I remember it was really... I don't remember all the details right now just because there's been so much other stuff going on, you
know.
But I remember being quite lit by it all.
Right. And you can see the thing is that that's an implicit knowing. See, it's a feeling that's in your body. And I didn't finish that because what happens is that a new neural pathway can be created.
Mm-hmm.
This soldier, for instance, okay, so... when he would feel a trigger that had to do with any kind of vulnerability or fear or any kind of closeness or trying something new, for him it was trying something new, which is vulnerability, right?
Mm-hmm.
He would just freeze and he couldn't do it.
Hmm.
Well, I've got pictures. As a matter of fact, my desktop now is rolling pictures as I'm talking to you, and I just saw a picture of him that I took with a horse.
Hmm.
And this guy, after 2 days, was leading a horse, and he had never been near horse. He was terrified of being near the horses.
Hmm.
So we didn't push him in there, but he was ready, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so to see this big guy leading this big horse, the smile on his face, I mean, it just said everything.
Oh, what a relief, eh?
Yeah.
So what do these guys do? They then continue with horse work? Or?
Well, they may continue with horse work. Mm-hmm. Actually, one of the people that brought them is works with the soldiers, and so he got to see and experience it himself. He's also a soldier himself. Retired military himself. So he got to see and experience it. So one thing that I think happens is that people can continue, and that's what I'm saying. I'm doing this one day mental health day when I'm in Washington to talk to people that are therapists about how the horse work can assist them and help them with their clients.
Oh, that's great.
So, and that's what I did. I mean, when I first met Linda, I was bringing my clients to work with her.
Hmm.
And then we eventually, after somebody got to know her and know the horses, they might work with her 1 week and then come back and work with me the next week.
Hmm.
And what I got to see was just exponential. Just the way that they started to get healed was amazing.
Isn't that exciting? Now, I've heard of groups where, for example, women with breast cancer. Or,
yes.
Does that just work with the unconscious and the emotional stuff behind developing any kind of illness? Have you got all kinds of groups according to what illness they're dealing with?
That happens. Actually, I've worked with some breast cancer survivors with the horses, which has been amazing.
Hmm.
But I think what happens with groups, whether they come together like that, you know, a commonality.
Mm-hmm.
The soldiers certainly had a commonality. There's a term called emotional resonance.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you resonate with and you feel into that. One of the things that I'm watching with horses is there's a resonance that happens before the person even goes in and works with the horse. You can see it.
Hmm.
When I teach people now, I'm actually working with them I want them to see that, to start to identify it.
Hmm.
'Cause it helps people then, you know, we want to be able to give them some information when they go home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so remember what it felt like when you were with that horse. Maybe you can make that change. That man I was talking about will be different now in his life.
Mm.
And yes, one thing that we always do with people is we do a follow-up call. And also follow-up, you know, like a 3-month, 6-month follow-up.
And do you find that people have made huge changes with their maybe career, relationship, everything?
Well, that's why I think, I mean, I used to always say to Linda, you know, when we were working together, see, we started out, you know, we didn't have anybody that we trained. Then we worked with people that became, you know, they became approved instructors.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would go out and they would work with people. And then people would have these big aha experiences, right? And then they call, and I did mostly interviewing when I worked at Epona, and they call and I'd be interviewing, and they say, well, Kathleen, you won't believe it. And of course, I would always go, because it was their story. Of course, inside I'm going, well, yeah, I probably will, but go ahead and tell me your story. And this happened, and that happened, and this changed. And I believe that's why more and more people are wanting to be educated and trained in this.
So
there's a lot of nuance, so mm-hmm. it's not, you know, a real easy thing to do. But
where would you want to see it evolve from here?
I want to see it evolve for the horses are always, always the co-facilitators.
Mm.
I don't want to ever see anybody say they do this work and use a horse.
Mm.
I want people to really be able to understand that our work with the horses is because of their grace. And also what I'd like to see is more professionalism given to our field.
Hmm.
Right now, it's one of those, you know, it's a new thing.
Yeah, it still is relatively new,
isn't it? It really is. But that's why I like this guy that was interviewing me in England for some documentary that sometime will be out, I guess. And he's the one that said practical. I said, I like that because I would like to be able to say to people, no, this is practical therapy,
mm-hmm.
because it teaches you about emotions. It teaches you about boundaries. It helps you to understand more about yourself. And
what if somebody listening to this show, I don't mean to interrupt you, but
I'm
bursting with it.
Okay, go ahead.
What if somebody listening to the show has a horse and they're very normal with the horse and they're hearing this? Can they then turn to their horse and begin to evoke that kind of interaction or resonance or relationship change?
They can. What I see happening is that people, as they start to do this work, a lot of people go through some grief and sadness, by the way, because maybe they just did what other people told them to do traditionally, you know?
Yeah.
This is the way people work with horses. And what I always say to people is, okay, don't, you know, forgive yourself, because a lot of us maybe didn't know some of that when we were, you know, parenting our children when they were younger too.
Yeah,
you know, we change. Mm-hmm. We know. I think it's evolving now, and so what I see happening now is that people are really starting to see their horses as the partners that they are. I mean, the horses are very willing to forgive.
So, in the power of perceiving and perception, then they're. Ability to see the horse in a different light is enough to evoke a different response.
I believe so.
Yeah.
I believe so. And you know, there are a lot of different ways that people can work with horses now, too. I had one student that I worked with a number of years ago, and she had two little ponies. And she worked with kids that had learning disabilities, reading problems. Two little miniatures, I think, anyway. Mm-hmm. And she's
reading
trying to come into her house.
The horses?
Yeah. You know, so, that, you know, there's just a lot of different ways that you can see, you know, people working.
Well, it's very interesting that there's so many miniature horses these days, and I wondered about that as well. Is that more convenient? Is that being bred to make it more
Well, sometimes suitable? Actually The ponies aren't as easy to handle.
Oh, they're not.
They're sort of got, some of them have little man complexes. Not always, but, you know. What I think is, it's when people ask me, I always say it's nice to have a variety, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But somebody was just asking me that the other day. They said, you know, if I have two horses that are, you know, 15 hands, is that going to be too intimidating? And I said, well, those are the two horses you have.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know. The right people will come to you to work with those horses. I don't really think, I mean, I've seen every different size of horse work well.
Hmm.
I mean, if a horse is terribly aggressive, obviously that's not a good match.
Mm-hmm. So if you're going to work with little children, they probably accept that a horse is a horse, even if it's big, eh?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, the little Arabs and stuff are good with the kids. Because they're very sensitive anyway.
Is that miniature?
No, an Arab isn't. Linda's horses, a lot of her horses are Arabs.
Yeah.
Rasa, who just recently passed away, by the way, she's on the other side.
Oh.
The amazing horse that started this work for all of us.
Mm.
She's an Arab.
Hmm.
And her, didn't you live here when her little baby spirit was born?
I believe I did, yes.
I think you did. I think you came and saw him.
Yes, I did.
Well, he's a dad now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, that must have been 15 years ago or so.
Yeah. Oh, not 15 years.
Not 15,
long.
10 years or something.
I don't know. Yeah.
Well, the other thing is that, like, aging, what you're talking about, people when you were in the nursing home and so on, and people, some people are still connected. Do you think it's a great way to work with seniors who are in such situations, some that are kind of in a vague place? Do horses help them?
They can. As a matter of fact, there was somebody that was bringing a horse one of the days that I was there up to the nursing home, and it wasn't someone that was, you know, necessarily trained in facilitating like I am, or I train people, but just being in the presence sometimes of a horse really can make a difference.
Oh, so it kind of wakes people up?
Yeah, and horses are very, very attuned to space. Hmm. So like even if someone's in a wheelchair, you know, they know where you are. They have to know where you are because since they're prey animals, they need to be able to run wherever they need to run.
Yeah, so they're watchers or vigilant.
Very much. They're very in tune to where you are. I mean, that doesn't mean I put someone in a wheelchair with a horse that I didn't know. I don't mean that. But
no.
I think there's lots of different things that can happen with the horses.
Hmm.
I know one of my former students was working with people in a nursing home, and she took Linda's cards, the way the horse cards, and she started working with the people with the horse cards. Just the visual image of the horse.
Hmm. And how did that work? Was it good?
Well, yeah, it worked well.
Hmm.
The visual image of the horse. First of all, it's kind of when you say, you know, I work, when people ask me what I do, they go, you do what? So it always sparks a little bit of interest, right?
Oh, that's great.
So now, whatever, you know.
And also, what about the horses themselves? Do they bond in family? Are they, you know, I know they run
in
herds.
The horses are herd animals.
Mm-hmm.
That's another thing that's happening more and more is I'm starting to see people really work with their horses in a way that they're living more in natural environments. They're living more within their families. They're not separating them out like they used to as much.
And I met someone who said that she doesn't bring in a sire to impregnate her mare. She makes sure that they're all romantic before there's any sex, if you will, you know.
Yeah.
And it makes a better colt. Do you know about that? I guess you do.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's part of it, isn't it?
You know, Ross and Merlin had their babies by putting them together. Also, Merlin is a father. He was the father for one of Comet's babies. Or Comet had two babies.
Hmm.
Another horse that we used to work with.
So the horses are really bonded in terms of their own relationship, aren't they? Are they mated for a long period of time, or are they not?
Not necessarily that way. Yeah. But when you see a herd of horses, you'll see who the leader is. It's usually the mare, by the way. The stallion follows. The mare leads. Okay.
Oh, wow. That's good.
Let's
practical.
Right. It's very matriarchal, actually, the herd of horses.
How long is the mare attached to the colts?
Pardon me?
How long is the mother attached to her babies?
Well, that's another thing that people are changing a little bit. They used to take the babies away. It was just very traumatic.
Mm.
So now, you know, people that I know that have had new foals actually keep the mother and the baby together much longer.
Oh, I see. Oh, this is really nice.
What they start to do is sometimes what they do, I mean, the only ones that I was experiencing firsthand were Linda's horses. But what you would do is during a certain part of the day, maybe separate them. It's almost like a mother breastfeeding. You got to, like, give them a little bit of space. Okay? Because otherwise the horse wants to nurse all the time.
I think this is really interesting because it's changing the whole format of the way horses are being treated all over the world, isn't it?
I believe it is. I really believe it is. That's what's so exciting. I mean, that's the piece that's magic, if you want to use the word magic. That's the piece that is inspiring.
Well, you made a link between that and sustainability, too, didn't you?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Maybe you want to talk about that a little bit?
The sustainability of the people or the horses or both?
It doesn't really matter. It's just that there's so much about sustainability these days, about being in attunement with nature and
right.
with everything feeding everything else in a nice cyclical fashion.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I'll talk just a little bit about, since I just got back from England, but where I work in England is all biodynamic farming.
Wow.
So the biodynamics are working with all the different animals. I mean, like when Suntui works with her horses, mm-hmm. all their poop goes into the garden.
Great.
You know, so it's all recycled.
Mm-hmm.
The children there, they know, you know, about how the animals, you know, where the animals are and how they work. I think that, you know, there's a lot you see, you know, of children now that are actually nature deprived.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Mm-hmm.
So what you're starting to see more and more is people just having an opportunity to be out in nature, whether it's a walk in the woods or whether it's with the horses or whether it's with some chickens. I think that's really important.
And is it a big deal in England that this kind of consciousness is a really huge?
Well, the area that in Sussex where I go is known for its biodynamic farming.
Ah,
and,
great.
And you know, raising the chickens and the cows and all that. So that whole area is open to all these different possibilities.
Well, it's sort of interesting because I'm often thinking how the big, big systems are falling down, crumbling all over the place. But I always say to people, we can't panic because new systems are emerging, these little bright
yeah.
lights all over the world. And this is one of them. It's a big one, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. And you know, when people are coming, it's kind of like you can't, when you have an experience with a horse,
mm-hmm.
You can't ever think of animals in the same way again,
mm-hmm.
because you really get to feel and experience the sentient being,
mm-hmm.
and so it makes all your relationships, I believe, different. I think it really, and that's why I remember when I was naming my website, I thought, oh my God, they're going to think I'm really out there when I say sacred, but it is sacred.
Mm-hmm.
It's a sacredness of relationship. It's a sacredness of the union. It's those different opportunities that happen. And I think the horses, again, because they are accessible, are really leading the way if we pay attention to them.
If we pay attention. I think it's the way you're talking, I'm going, isn't it like really letting ourselves sensitize ourselves to that shared resonance, and you know, that we're
yes.
getting the education on a resonant level instead of just words and actions, you know.
Yes.
I'm so excited. So tell us again what your website is and talk a tiny bit before we have to sign off
okay.
about your up-and-coming workshops and what kinds of things you're
okay.
going to teach.
Okay, great. It's sacredplaceofpossibility.com. And the workshops that are coming up in the next month or so, I'll be going to Washington State and working with a woman named Drea Bowen, and there's information about that on my website.
It looks very interesting.
Yeah, I'm excited about that.
It's for mental health workers, right?
Well, there's just a day for mental health workers. It's an informational day. And then there's actually 2 days that we're going to be working with people that are actually in the field that are already doing the work with horses. And it's kind of an update about really helping them see the latest scientific, psychological stuff that really backs up what we're doing with the horses.
Oh, that's great. All the research and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm excited about. Again, thank you all you different researchers out there.
Yeah. Oh, I'd like to read those books that you mentioned, too.
I'll send you a book.
Please.
The book list. I will.
Yeah.
And then I'm working in New York with Lisa Merle with Equine Alchemy, and then going to Germany with Eva Blazer, and I can't remember her name of her website. Can't remember, but it's all on my website.
And these are all going to be to help train or coach?
No, they're all different, actually. Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm working with Lisa Merle's program. She's a coach, and it's a coach training program. That's the one in New York State.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I go to Germany, I'm doing a workshop with people that are interested in this work. So it's a straight workshop for anybody could come. I mean, you know, someone like yourself might be interested in that.
I only know how to count in German. That's it.
I know. I'm excited because there's, I think, 3 or 4 people that came to the workshop I did last year in Germany that are coming back.
Oh, great. Oh,
so I'm really
wonderful.
Excited about that. I'm excited to see them. That's interesting when I work in a country that I don't speak German.
Mm-hmm.
but I get to work with people, and I always say, speak first in your native language about your experience, because they're in that resonance, and you know, they're in that feeling state.
Right. Oh, right. And can you pick it up from the resonance?
Well, I get enough. Yes. I get it. And of course, my friend Eva can translate for me.
How interesting for you. You're really making a difference all over the place with this wonderful work.
I believe
work.
So. I'm very grateful.
Oh, I'm very excited for you.
As you are, too.
I hope so.
I mean, look at Paradigm Shifters. How long have you been doing this?
This is probably 3 years or 4 years now.
Yeah,
and I'm loving it. I'm learning so much. But also, I kind of see this wonderful sparkling canopy of consciousness moving around the globe, and you're really a part of it, and it's very exciting.
Right. Thank you. And I'm really, like I said, I'm really grateful for that. So, yeah, let's do a girl talk.
Well, let's talk soon, and yes. I thank you so much. And I kept her waiting, everybody, but she was patient and gave us a wonderful discussion. Thank you so much,
Kathleen. Yeah, now I'm going to go play with my 3 grandkids.
Have a great time.
Okay.
Good night.
Thank you.
Safe travels.
All right, thank you. Bye-bye.
Goodbye. Wow, that was Kathleen Ingram with Equine Therapy. All over the world, it's so exciting to think that you can reflect from a horse and back to a horse so that you can sort out a lot of problems, and so can the horse. Boy, this is really an exciting time to be alive on the planet. Thank you, Kathleen Ingram. And next Tuesday night at 8 o'clock is going to be Galexis. So many of you love Galexis, the channeled group of beings that come through Ginger Metro. So tune in Tuesday night at 8 o'clock, wonderful BBS radio. And also at Thursday night, I'll be doing Radiance by Design at 7 o'clock, followed by Jackie Salvitti and ET Healing and Explorations in Consciousness at 8 o'clock. This is Veronica Entwistle saying, if you'd like a session with me or want to give me feedback or suggestions about guests, email me, Veronica at veronicaentwistle.com. That's Veronica at veronicaentwistle.com. Thank you so much for listening, and I send you all much love. Good night.